fellow rock stars from Rockland USA Studios in Washington, D.C. This is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, and keep you updated on the path to retirement and financial freedom without any fees or commissions. Kind of what we do here. I'm Craig with Amanda, your financial coaches, and we're so thankful that you've joined us. You can call us 24 hours a day, 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Leave a voicemail, text us with your questions or comments, and we'll answer them on the show. And if you're too shy for all that, you can always email us to podcast@rocklandusa.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, one of the hardest working women in America.
Yeah. Hey, Amanda. I have exciting news, Craig.
What?
I have joined Instagram.
Oh my God. You are the last person in the world. Yes. We can now shut it down.
Even like, I think Jennifer Aniston even beat me to it, right?
So, Amanda, what is, drum roll, everybody, what is your Instagram?
Well, you're all going to be sorely disappointed when you go there, but it's
Is it Hot Mama's?
No, it's Agile Amanda.
Agile? What? A-G-I-L-E Amanda.
Yes. Yes. Same for Twitter. I have resurrected my dead Twitter account, which also has nothing to share. So feel free to follow me and I will follow you back.
If you want to follow nothing, follow Agile nothing. Amanda.
Hey, I'm gonna work on doing something. So you get in early so you'll be the first to know when I actually start doing something cool.
Yes. Cool Amanda. Hey everybody, just a quick reminder, we're giving away those gift cards again, $50 gift card. If you call and leave us a financial question, leave a voicemail at 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-ROCK, R-O-C-K. Let's see, hold on, 989-888-7625. And if you leave that and we use your question, you're entered to win every month, once a month. If you leave it for March, you're only eligible for March. You have to ask another question for May or June or July because we'll be here.
And guess what? Since we're not getting a lot of phone calls, your odds of winning are very high.
Yes, the odds are very high. Very, very high. But we have a bigger audience now than when we've... See, guys, we used to do this back in the first few episodes.
Yeah.
And there weren't that many people, so we had winners back then. But we just didn't promote it anymore. Because it actually costs us money to do this, but
yeah. So why are we promoting it now?
Because now we can probably get a lot more phone calls now.
Oh, so. Okay.
But everyone's so shy. Whatever. Hmm. Anyway, what's coming up in this episode?
Okay, we've got some social media questions, which Craig is going to help us with.
Yes.
I'm going to talk about a topic called financial infidelity.
Oh.
Yeah, that'll be good.
That's a good one.
Craig's going to take us through baby step 6, which is about paying off your mortgage. And then we'll wrap it up. We teased this on the last episode. We're going to talk about the envelope system of budgeting in our Savvy Savings segment.
When people heard that term financial infidelity, I hope they didn't turn the podcast off. Because I have a feeling a lot of people in some way... I can't wait to hear about that.
Yeah.
What you got for me?
All right. We've got some social media questions. Number one, my 16-year-old daughter has $5,000 she would like to invest.
Whoa. What? How old?
Yes, 16.
Has how much?
5,000.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
That is awesome. I wonder where she's at. Do you have a suggestion of where I should go or how I should invest it?
Well, you know, you're going to hear me say the same old thing. I'm Mr. Consistent, Amanda.
I bet I could name all three this time.
I bet you can. So, guys, this is actually, you know, it doesn't matter how old your kids are, really. If they have money coming in and they want to get excited about investing, all you have to do is you... either do it online or you can actually, you know, what's kind of cool though, Amanda, is, hey, what are our three favorite low cost providers that we get nothing from?
We like Vanguard.
Yes.
Schwab.
Yes.
And Fidelity.
Bam. Not bad for a late night podcast. So,
first time for everything.
You know, because Fidelity and Schwab actually have offices you could walk into.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of cool. I mean, I didn't do that with my kids, but you could take them to the local Schwab office, have them sit down, actually go through the process of opening up the account, and they can see, wow, you know, they're not waving goodbye to their money. They're going to see how the whole process works. Anyway.
Yeah, and maybe they'll get some cool swag if they go in.
Ooh, yeah. You know what? I bet some of those places do give something to the minors, some little gifts and stuff. Anyway, but in order to do something for a minor, you have to open up a custodian account. So there has to be an adult part of that. And it's very easy to set it up. Very easy to set up. So you set up a custodian account. And so I would recommend you do that and then put the $5,000 in there. And of course, Amanda, I'm going to tell them to put in this mutual fund that we keep talking about. The old S&P 500 index fund, and all three of these companies, everybody has one, and some of them nowadays from these low cost providers, they've actually dropped it down to zero cost because they're competing against each other right now. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Because these funds actually really don't cost anything to run. They're basically taking whatever the Standard & Poor's company says are the top 500, and they just put it into the computer, and the computer automatically does it. It's really, that's why these funds are so low cost. There's not a manager that's sitting there deciding every day what they should get rid of, what they should trim down. There's no managing. It's automated. Mm-hmm. That's why these things are very low cost or no cost.
So I might make an additional suggestion.
Sure.
So not contrary, but it's another option. The other thing that they could consider doing is putting that $5,000 into a 529 education savings plan.
Yes.
Yeah. So same thing. The parent would have to open the plan and then identify the daughter as the beneficiary. So hopefully this daughter trusts her mother with her money. And that would be another option to start saving for college since she's 16. And then if, college doesn't work out or anything, she can certainly roll that into an IRA down the road.
Right.
So either option are good options. Same concept for both.
And I'm going to throw a third option in there.
Okay.
This is a very popular thing to do. So if you go to Vanguard Schwab, let's say you go to Schwab or Fidelity, you can also open up a brokerage account. Once you set up this account, you can do all kinds of things. You can have a bank account, whatever. But let's say you have a kid who's into computer gaming, right? And it's really neat. You get them interested in stocks and stuff. So they could say, well, I play video games. So they could actually put that money towards a video game company that they like, that they're playing their games, because those stocks actually do fairly well. So, if they want to get more into stock investing instead of just putting in a mutual fund, they could put it into something like that if they can afford it. I don't know what some of these shares are costing right now. I think some of them are in the 20s or 30s. So they might be able to get 100 or a couple hundred shares or something. Maybe do partial, some in the index, and then let them go buy some 100 shares of EA Games or Electronic Arts or something like that. Or, it gets them interested in how the financial system works. So that's another thing I've heard is a very popular
idea. The only challenge with that is that, of course, you need to do a lot more homework with that because you both need to be knowledgeable. And, it could be a riskier.
It's much riskier.
Yeah. So you have to be willing to lose all that money then.
But it gets them into researching the company and seeing and actually kids are so smart nowadays. They're on Reddit and everything. And so they can go find out and ask questions and, it gets them to understand how business works, really. Mm-hmm. It's a great thing.
All right.
You got another one?
I do. I have one more for you.
Okay.
All right. This one says, I'm 53, made 5 years with my current employer. I put 15% into my 401k. I purchased a home in Texas in April and have been paying that monthly amortization amount in addition to the mortgage as principal only towards my mortgage every month.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's pretty smart. Yeah. I am not debt free. I owe student loans, credit cards, and other loans to the tune of approximately $240,000.
Ouch.
I know I need to have 3 to 6 months of emergency funds saved. Besides that, are you saying I should stop investing 15% even at my age? Again, he's 53. I don't know why I assumed it's a him. and pay all that debt down before paying off the house.
Okay, there's a lot going on here. First of all, let's
he or she
he or she. You're 53 years old. Does it say how much? It never said how much they have currently saved in their 401k. It really doesn't make any difference, but I'm just curious.
It doesn't. No, just 15% into the 401k.
Okay,
but
so...
But he or she did say they're at 5 years, so it's my guess is they're probably vested at this point.
Yeah, and they also probably work somewhere else before they work at the current employer, because you said they work 5 years with the current employer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a couple things going on here, and you can throw in your two cents in afterwards. If we're going to do baby steps, let's apply the baby steps to this. We're going in a completely different order here. We're jumping into baby step six, and we haven't even done baby step one yet, from what I can tell.
Yeah.
At least we know we haven't done two or three. They may have the $1,000 in savings.
Yep.
You said you're in debt of $240,000.
Right. That's not going away just because you retire.
Right. When you retirement is not an age, it's a number. If you don't have the money, you don't retire. But number one, that debt is keeping you from your retirement. You got to get rid of that debt. I say, you guys stop that 15%. You need to find every bit of money. You need to do Amanda's budget. You have to trim everything that is extra. No more Netflix, none of this stuff. You have a big hole to fill and you need a big shovel. If your one job isn't bringing enough income, you're going to have to do some stuff in the evenings and weekends. That's all there is to it. Because until you get rid of that $240,000, it didn't even mention that was mortgage, right? No, it's not mortgage. This is
an addition.
Forget the mortgage. You're paying extra the mortgage. You should be taking every bit of money, pay your regular mortgage. Everything else goes to that debt, and you've got to get rid of that before you worry about your mortgage or your 401k.
Yeah, no, this is a great question. I'm so glad that this person wrote in, because there's a chance here we can help course correct.
Yes.
Before it's too late.
Right. So if you do the baby steps, you're going completely backwards. And there's a reason why you got to do it the other way. Please stop paying extra on the mortgage. I don't care where you're at on it. Stop that. Everything goes towards your debt, and you got to work some extra hours, do some extra jobs in the evening. You got to do some side gigs. You got to get rid of it. The sooner you get rid of that, you're on the way to financial freedom, but that 240 is going to kill you.
You know, it's a little scary, 53 years old, to still have student loans.
I know. There was no breakdown between student loans, credit cards, and other loans, right?
No, but student loans are usually on a 10-year payment plan.
Yeah.
Anyway, great suggestions, Craig. And I agree 100%.
If we can help you at all, please message us. We will lead you through the steps. We will, and we're not charging for that, guys. We'll lead you through it. I'll help you out. Okay. I want to see you retire and be happy. We got to get rid of that 240,000.
Yep.
Hey, let's get to another topic. Let's get something more upbeat. What do we have? Financial infidelity. You have a topic for us.
We're talking about cheaters.
Boy, this is the most depressing episode ever.
Well, in honor of February, you know, last week was Valentine's Day. We're going to talk about financial infidelity.
Oh.
Cheaters.
Okay.
U.S. News did a survey and indicated that about 22% of respondents said they've either committed financial infidelity or been a victim of it.
These are the ones that admitted to it.
Yes.
Wow.
But I mean, if you've been the victim of it, why wouldn't you admit
it? Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Good point. Okay, you got me.
Yeah. But so either they've committed it or been a victim of it. So granted, there were probably more people admitting to being victims, but that's a whole other story. But think about it. That's like 1 in 5 people.
That's nuts.
Right. So that's basically like 2.5 couples.
I'm not going to get into the half couple part, because that's a little weird. Okay.
But the majority, nearly 60%, said that financial infidelity is as bad as or worse than romantic infidelity.
Wow.
It's not surprising that 40% aren't sure they'd ever confess to committing it. So like you said, and it can be difficult for a relationship to recover from financial infidelity. I can't disagree with that, Craig. Would you? I would feel pretty bummed if my money disappeared, probably more so than, you know.
I've heard call-ins to some of these radio shows like Ramsey or Clark, and these people are talking about stories about six figures that they did not know, and they just found out. And I can't believe how calm they are, because I don't think I'd be that calm.
And what's sad is a lot of times people, and I shouldn't say a lot of times, but there are times when you don't discover it until the person who's committed those transgressions, you know, either passes away or there's a divorce or some other reason. And then all of the finances, you know, come to light. Mm. And it's a big surprise, you know, that there was, you know, 401k loans and things like that that people didn't know about. All right. So here's a few other findings from the survey. More than 22% say that one person handles all the finances in their relationship. 70% say you should openly share finances, but 18% also say you should have some privacy with money. So I found that was interesting. Hmm,
that is.
You should share, but also keep it secret.
Yeah. Yeah, but I still want to have my little secret.
Yeah, but you know, I kind of get that. You know, like I've talked before how we do a budget.
Right.
So obviously it's in our shared Google Drive and we both have visibility to it, but we also have our own little allowances that, you know, you can do whatever you want with it.
Right.
And if you don't have to share what you're doing with it. Mm-hmm. So that's nice too. The survey did show that the most common tip off for a partner's deception was spotting an unexpected account balance.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Duh.
But the most common type of financial infidelity experienced is from hidden debts or bank accounts.
Wow. Well, how would you find out about somebody's other bank account?
Yeah.
I guess if you do a credit check.
Yes.
I don't know.
Or yeah, maybe you're trying to get a new loan together or
the envelope showed up at the house instead of the P.O. box, I guess.
Exactly. Yep. Ooh. That or you see a transfer in or out of your joint account, maybe that looks weird. Yeah, I don't know.
If any of our listeners have had experience of that, if you have any signs that you've run into, please send us in. We'll read them. We'll leave your name out. But I'd like to hear more about how you would know. That'd be interesting.
But the most common deception was people making secret purchases followed by hiding debts or financial accounts.
Mm.
Yeah. I think it's actually more common than people think. Like it doesn't have to rise to this level of a huge secret account. It could just be that you have a habit and you like to collect certain things.
Mm-hmm.
If you find that you're having to sneak it into the house, that means you have a problem, right?
Yes.
Like if you're hiding your purchase, hoping that your spouse doesn't notice, you suddenly have one more purse.
Yeah. When you're hiding presents and it's not December, you have a problem. Yeah.
You have a problem. Yeah. Yeah. So that is a good indication that something might be amiss, is if you feel, because obviously you've got some kind of, you know, spidey tingle of guilt, then that you're trying to hide something, then it probably is an indication that you're not being open and honest in your relationship about your spending.
Mm.
So how do we prevent this or address it? What do you think, Craig?
Oof. Well,
there's some clues here in some of the findings from the survey, right?
I'm going to take a stab. Well, number one, when you get married, mm-hmm. whatever the debts, it's now yours together.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now, I know you guys, you have some money that gets split up. You know, I personally, you know, I'm a different generation, I guess. This multiple account thing that people do, like, someone has their account and they have theirs. And so, hey, I'm going to take care of this bill. You take care of that bill. That's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're already keeping everything separate. You know, the money is, you know, the paycheck's going over here. No one even sees the paycheck.
Right.
I hear that's very common nowadays. Yeah. I think that right there is leading to this. That's just my personal, I have no data. Everything should be going in the same account. That way everybody can see the one account. You're married. You're not boyfriend, girlfriend anymore. When you did the vows, you said you are one. You know, you sit down and communicate and talk.
Yeah, anyway. And that's a good point. You know, it's no longer, oh, these are your student loans and this is my car payment.
Right.
No, it's these are our student loans right. and our car payment. Yeah. So in a partnership, like you said, it's best to share the responsibilities, even not just having separate accounts, but even just having one person in charge of the money can set up an imbalance of power.
Right.
And make it easy for that one person to be deceptive. It is okay to separate duties based on your individual skill sets. Just, you know, make sure you agree on who's doing which tasks so the bills are paid on time. So like I do all of our spreadsheet work. You know, I am the spreadsheet person and I pay the bills, but we sit down and we talk about it. We have regular finance meetings and yeah, and we have some bills that are emailed to one person and some to the other. And that way, you know, you can share and talk about them.
Right.
One quick warning before we move on. Financial infidelity could also be in the form of your partner stealing your identity and taking out loans or opening credit cards in your name without your knowledge. So like you had mentioned, you definitely want to be checking your credit report at least annually to help. I guess it wouldn't really prevent it, but it would at least identify it so you can correct it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But if you froze your credit and your partner doesn't know how to unfreeze it, that would take care of it.
And we did talk about that in the past as well. Freezing your credit is a big, big deal. You know, and sometimes there are everyone has their demons, right? So you just don't know if your partner is really struggling with something. You know, I know someone whose husband has a problem with gambling. So in that case, they do have to have separate accounts, you know, to protect at least some of the family finances.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there are different situations. Obviously, when you find out about a situation like that, you have to stop the bleeding and then address the issue.
Yep. I buy.
Almost a third say if they've discovered financial infidelity, they'd have a discussion about it, which I find interesting that it's only a third, really.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Most people would just go straight to an argument with their partner, right?
Well, that would probably be me. I'd probably be so upset.
There might be some four-letter words uttered, right?
Well, it depends on the amount. I mean, if we're talking about one purchase, but if we're talking about five, six figures, that's an issue, big time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, try to prevent some of this by having weekly or monthly money meetings with your significant other. We schedule big monthly, or not big monthly, but we do have regular larger meetings about our investment goals or our goals for the next quarter, things like that. And we, you know, go. We're like, okay, we call them like board meetings, even though it's just the two of us. Like
so our do next you guys do your budget at that time too?
No, I do. I have a rolling budget. I do my budget every pay period, twice a month. Yeah, I do budgeting twice a month. Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's on like autopilot because I'm on my seventh year of spreadsheet. So.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. No, 7 years. I'm not stopping because it is something you should do forever. But yeah, so you just do a meeting and you figure out what time period works for you. Like us, we're on autopilot, so it's less frequently. If you're in the earlier stages and you're trying to get out of debt or, you know, you have other more immediate goals, then you may want to meet more often and just talk about it. You know, not talking about it doesn't make the problem go away. You can't be an ostrich with the head in the sand?
Yes.
All right. So set some goals. Once you get into a groove with your money meetings, it's time to look at the short term and long term goals and talk about them, both joint and separate goals. You know, maybe you want to go back to school and that's a goal of yours and you don't see how it's possible. Well, sometimes if you talk about it with your significant other, you can develop a joint plan that makes your dreams possible, both individually and together. Joint goals might include retirement funds, vacation planning. We love vacations. Building an emergency fund or remodeling your house. Some separate goals might be a guy's weekend away or a girl's weekend. Every now and then, my sisters and I do a sister's weekend somewhere fun. Mm-hmm. So that's always fun, you know, or whatever your particular interest is. So it's healthy to have separate interests, but where money's involved, there should be a mutual agreement that the funds will be used that way.
Yeah, I love that.
That's really it.
Could you imagine? Oh, Now you got me thinking how bad that is. I mean, I hear the phone calls of some of these talk shows, and it's just, man, I feel bad for some of these people.
Yeah,
to recover from some of these situations, I mean, it could take years, decades.
And it is a complete violation of trust, but.
Oh, yeah. And how do you know, it's hard to rebuild trust after that.
It is. I mean, I'm not a marriage counselor, so I'm not going to get into that part of it. But in terms of your finances, prevention is the best medicine.
All right. Should we take a break before we get into baby step six?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's take a quick break, everybody. We got, we have needs too, called restrooms. Hey, everybody, you're listening to Rock on the Money with Craig and Amanda. $50 gift cards to Amazon or Walmart. There's a long story behind that. But if you call 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625, ask your financial question. If we use your question in a specific month, you're in the running for a $50 gift card. Simple as that. We used to do that a while ago, Amanda, and for first five episodes, and now we're on episode, 22?
22.
But our audience is much bigger now. That it was is, back at five.
Which is great. Thank you, everyone.
And shout out to the people that are spreading the word. I'm getting reports now from people about how they were pushed into listening to us, and they're changing their stuff. And it's amazing how many soldiers we have out there. It's great. We really appreciate you guys.
Yeah. Have we gotten any more cool reviews lately, Craig?
I haven't even looked.
Oh.
I'll have to read them. I bet we do. The amount of people that have been coming up to me in airports and stuff, literally this past weekend, no more than five people came up and told me they're listening to the podcast and they were thanking us. And I messaged you immediately. I'm like, hey, these people wanted me to pass it on to you. I mean, yeah. This is the first time it started happening. So it's really spreading. Anyway, hey, time for baby step six. We're almost up to seven. That's quick review, awesome. This five baby steps. I'll handle this one. It's late at night. You guys have no idea how late it is while we're recording this. But baby step one is your initial $1,000 emergency fund. But if you only make $24,000 or $25,000, we only want $500 in there. Baby step two is the big kahuna.
Yeah.
Kahuna. You're paying off all of your debts, excluding your mortgage. Because we're getting ready to talk about that.
The budgeting comes in handy.
Yeah. And we're going to do the smallest one to largest in the amount, not interest rates or anything like that. Maybe step three is we are doing our fully funded emergency fund, which we're going to talk about in this portion right here, Amanda. Maybe step four, five, and six, you can do them simultaneously, but in this order, in priority. Baby step four is doing 15% minimum. I should emphasize it. It's minimum 15%.
Oh, you should emphasize that. Yeah,
because you can always put more in your retirement fund.
As 15% long as you're qualified minimum. To, yes. There are some.
Yeah.
The lawyer.
Yeah, 15% in there. And then, of course, baby step five is you want to start planning for college for your kids and start funding that as well. Also, baby step six, which can be controversial, Amanda. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Some people want to, I'm not getting into a lot of the debates out there. If you guys want emails, we'll read the emails about the pros and cons about paying off your mortgage. We're going to cover baby step six. I'm for paying it off. Mm-hmm. I know some other, yours is paid off, isn't it?
No.
No. Okay. Are you paying it off or?
Am I paying it off? Yeah, 1 month at a time.
There you go. All right. So I am not
the poster child here when it comes to it. We have a mortgage. But we also know it's a short term. Because we move every 2 or 3 years, it's always a short term investment that then we recoup when we sell, because we buy, you know, fixer uppers and flip them over a 2 to 3 year period.
So, see, you're doing the investment angle of this because you're in a military couple. And so you are moving all the time. So this would not pertain to you.
It doesn't exactly. I mean, if we were super wealthy, then I would buy them all with cash. Like the one, and then we buy investment properties elsewhere where we decide during our meetings, our board meetings.
Right, your meetings.
Yes, and our board meetings where we're going to invest.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And typically people that do the baby steps when they get to this, the average is 6 to 7 years to pay off the mortgage is what those people end up doing because they're so motivated. By the time they get to this, that is the average that they get reports of. So, but can you imagine, like, if you did not have a mortgage, think everybody what your mortgage amount is. If you didn't have to write that check or electronically send that in any longer. How much faster you would become wealthy. And I mean, imagine what that is. And
during our meetings, we have a bit of a discussion about this topic because, you know, we invest in other properties too. Right. And right now we have another mortgage on a separate property, but the next one I am advocating for cash only. So we are, you know, spreading our risk, so to say.
And I personally am in that kind of camp. If I do go down that route, I want to do maybe fund the first one, but I mean, mortgage the first one, but I do want to pay cash for all the subsequent ones after that, because I heard that is a much lower risk. There's so much debates out there. I realize that, but anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it just slows down your ability to scale, but that's a whole different conversation. Right.
But you own it.
Yes.
And the risk is much reduced. So, and we're going to talk about risk in this. Everybody, when you first buy your home, or refinance it, here's what you're supposed to be doing as far as, and this goes back to your budgeting topic.
Yes.
Amanda, when you buy a home and you go in the realtor, and you're a broker, but
I'm a real estate agent, not a broker.
Oh, okay. So a lot of real estate agents tell people what they can afford. You need to tell them what you can afford. Now you can correct me if I worded that right, but you see what I'm getting towards here.
Yeah.
So when you look at your take-home pay, the rule for budgeting in the what we teach here is you want to do a 15-year fixed mortgage with a payment no more than 25% of your monthly take-home pay. Now, people are thinking, well, that means I can only afford this. Well, yeah.
Yeah,
because I just worked with someone the other day. They admitted they are home poor. They are their payment is more than 50% of their take home pay. And they got upset when they said, "You're telling me I need to sell my house." I'm like, "I didn't say it. You said it. You said your house poor. I didn't say it." But it was a whole conversation. That is really the rule. Now, if you're 26, 27, we're talking about 25% ish. But that also includes the PMI if that's in there. I mean, all that other stuff. Whatever the payment is, it's 25% of your monthly take home. Do you have any add-ons for that since you are a real estate agent?
Yes. So, but I focus on referrals only. So, I like to help out those who are similarly situated and need to move often and find an agent anywhere in the United States. I have a connection for you.
Oh, there you go.
Shameless plug there.
Hey, since you're not getting paid to do this, you're allowed to plug yourself. That's the way I look at it.
So I'm now a sponsor of the show.
Amanda's Real Estate. Go
ahead. So I think there's a couple other things that feed in here. Is how do you feel, Craig, about what amount should be a down payment?
Oh, well, I don't like PMI. I know there's like people doing 5-10% stuff. Yeah. I get leery about people only doing 5 or 10 because just like people are talking about house, the market bubbles, there are also housing bubbles too, depending on where you're at. Obviously, there's different areas that are coming down. So I like to have a buffer in there somehow. That's just
so. So the thing I see a lot, because we're in the military community, are these VA loans that are zero down.
Yes.
Payment. they get you though. There's loan initiation fee, or I don't remember exactly what they call it, but there's a big fee up front that they charge you. It's a percentage of the loan that has to be paid up front in the closing costs. And then, like you said, the value of the house could decline, and then you might be, you know, underwater by the time you have to leave in 2 or 3 years. So it's very risky. I am not a fan for zero down.
No.
I think you should have some skin in the game.
Remember 2008?
Yeah,
I do. That's kind of like what was going on back then. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, there was other shady things going on, but people were getting loans that should not be getting loans.
So you're going to tell us, though, why we should pay off your house early.
All right. So here's some reasons why you should pay it off early. I know this is a very controversial topic. Number one, you save money on all the interest. Do you have any stats on how much money you can save on, let's just say, a typical 30-year mortgage? Well, go ahead. Throw it in.
Like I've shared before, we just bought an investment property in Georgia.
Okay.
And it was like $153,000 in loan. So it was like a $200,000 house. We put 25% down. Mm-hmm. And when you get the loan documents, over a 30-year mortgage, you're going to pay an additional $100,000 in interest.
That's almost what you're paying.
Yeah.
That's two-thirds. Two-thirds
of the actual, yeah, exactly.
That's insane.
So, of course, we're not going to pay it off that slowly, but...
So, that's one reason to pay it off early. You're not paying all that interest if you're going over...
Because that's $100,000 you could put in your retirement fund.
By the way, here's a neat little stat I learned the other day is, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I'm just going to get the 30, but then I'm going to turn into a 15 on my own.
Yeah, that almost never happens.
Do you know what the percentages of people that follow through on that is?
I would say less than 10%.
Oh, it's 2.5%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Surprising. Nobody does it because they want to spend money on other things. Anyway, mm-hmm. just a little stat there. Other than saving my interest, you're mitigating your risk because mm-hmm. life happens, Amanda. Because if you have a paid off house and you're suddenly hit with a financial hardship, it's much easier to scrape together money for the basics like food, clothing, yep. transportation, mm-hmm. utilities, because that cost is a much lower level than your actual mortgage. And because it's paid off, Amanda, the bank can't foreclose. You know why you can't foreclose? Right. Because it's paid off, people.
Yeah, because the bank has no lien
it's
on
yours.
It. No interest.
Right. They can't come take it from you. When you protect the four walls and the roof, you have a roof because it's yours. Yep. They can't take it from you.
Yeah, it just gives you so much more flexibility. Like you, for some reasons, you need to go down to one income instead of both people working. You can do that. You have that financial freedom. You can spend more time with kids.
Yeah, can you imagine that? I mean, there's so many working couples. Both of them work. Both of them can't make it to the recital, the 4-on-4 soccer or whatever. I mean, can you imagine if you didn't have a mortgage, both of you don't have to work. You're not paying for daycare anymore, all kinds mm-hmm. of things.
Yeah.
Your actual cost's actually lower because you both aren't working.
And you have all this extra money back into your household budget each month. And you know, now that there's this much larger standardized deduction income tax returns, very few people are able to take advantage of mortgage interest because there's just no benefit for most people in itemizing deductions.
And that was one of the biggest arguments people used to have was, I can't write off my mortgage. I get to write off my mortgage interest. Well, guess what? You don't get to do that anymore.
I mean,
unless you're heavily in debt.
Right.
Because the only way you can write off is if you have so many write-offs, which is a huge interest thing. And that right there proves that you have too much house.
Right.
So, because if you're rich enough to have that house, you wouldn't have this debt in the first place. And also, when you pay off a mortgage, you get a huge raise.
Yeah.
And what you're supposed to be doing is if you have a paid off mortgage, then you take either all of it or a portion of it, and you're now rolling that into additional investments, and that's where you really develop and build up your wealth. And you do it quickly. At a much faster rate than you mm-hmm. did before. So if you're a couple in your 40s, and you still got 20 more years to work, you can really put a lot of money away. And when you hit that retirement age, you might be able to retire even earlier because you have 1, 2, 3, 4 million put away. because you didn't have a mortgage.
Yep.
There are some arguments out there that I found against paying off your house. So I'm going to go through these just to throw it out there. But we would love to get your feedback. If you want to tell us why or why you should not pay off your mortgage, please send in. Here's what I found here, what I Googled out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Number one, people feel that they should keep their holdings liquid, which lets them have flexibility in investing, or it gives them money in case there's an emergency. But what did we do back on baby step three with that one?
Yeah, you already funded an emergency fund.
We have 3 to 6 months of emergency fund already built. So I don't understand why that's even an argument, but I found it out there. Number two, returns on investing will be higher. Now, I can kind of see this argument. Some people have mortgages that are 2.5%. But right now, the way the stock market's rolling, in a simple index fund last year was 31%.
Right.
So I can kind of see that argument because this bull run isn't going to last forever. We're in a historic run. And at some point, it's going to drop. And we'll probably go lateral for a while.
Right.
Because it's happened before. Okay, it's just the way it works. I can kind of understand that. However, if you can get rid of your mortgage, you can dump even more money in over time and dollar cost averaging, and you're even buying more shares than you are now. I mean, there's different ways. The other way is that people argue is you're not diversifying your assets by only paying off one house in one real estate. You're not diversifying across other different kinds of things.
Right.
You're already doing your 15% in your 401k, your IRA. But if you get rid of the house, you can diversify across much greater things, is my opinion, because now you have all this money. I can go buy another property. I can go buy a business. There's a lot of things you can do because you don't have a mortgage payment. I don't know. Yep. I guess there's arguments with both sides.
Yeah. So I can't remember. I think I just talked about this not that long ago, but maybe it was at the budgeting in the last episode. So one relatively easy way of paying off your mortgage early is to make payment with every paycheck. If you're getting paid twice every 2 weeks instead of like once a month or twice a month, if you get paid every 2 weeks, that's 26 pay periods per year.
Whoa.
It actually ends up being an extra month of mortgage payment each year.
Wow.
And then because you're paying interest in advance, it actually takes years off of your mortgage payments. So it's really easy. You would send in half your mortgage each pay period to make up the full one, or you could send in a full one during one and then an extra payment on the second one if you can afford that. But just splitting it up, even if you don't pay any more each month, but just by splitting it up into two payments, you're going to actually make one full extra payment each year.
Typically, if you do the baby steps, the average time people pay off their houses is 7 years.
That's great.
That's great. That's half of a 15-year mortgage.
If only I stayed in a house for 7 years.
You will eventually. You'll have like 20 of them. You can pick one to stay in.
I know. Yeah.
You're working on it. All right. It's my time to take a break because Amanda is going to talk about savvy savings. That's why it's my favorite, Amanda. No, it's not.
Because you get to kick back and take a break.
I'm just kidding. Let's talk about what you got for budget basics. What do you have for us?
Yeah, budgeting basics, part two.
Part two.
So, I shouldn't say that because I'm going to lose track of which part we're on.
I know. Episodes, but. And someone will call us out on it. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. All right. So the next budgeting basics episode. Yes. Today we're going to talk about the envelope system. So I don't know who made this famous or if anyone really did or if it's just been around forever and ever. I know Dave Ramsey promotes it heavily. But this is a budgeting system for you to use. Again, last episode we talked about budgeting's really easy. It's super easy. You take your income, you subtract your expenses, and you should come to zero. Mm-hmm. That's a balance. That's what we call a balanced budget. Our government can't handle it, but you should be able to handle it. So you always want to do, I do $0 budgeting. So at the end of every pay period, there is no money left in my checking account. I live like in poverty on intentionally, because I have allocated every dollar to put my money to work, and I know exactly what it needs to be doing. So if you leave money in your account, I promise you're going to spend it, because you'll be like, oh, I have an extra $60. Let me just go to the ATM and pull this out for whatever. And that's not part of your budget. So the expense tracking method, we've talked about this before, is to pay cash in person. And that's what you do with your envelopes. They're all about organizing your cash for payments. We've talked before about how spending cash has a different psychological impact than, say, making a payment online or electronically or swiping your debit card. So, Craig, I know you do the banking differently. That's sort of doing it, but not quite, because you're getting a very different part of your brain engaged for that than you would if you had to physically hand cash over.
You know what drives people crazy at the store? When you hand them cash. Have you ever noticed that? They're not used to it. They're like,
yeah.
And some of them can't count money, so you better check your change.
Yeah. It happens to me at drive-thrus sometimes, because I use cash. You know, if I want to get a Starbucks, it's cash.
It drives them nuts. Yeah. Anyway.
Of course, there are some things that just don't make any sense to make cash. So if you can auto draft things like retirement, your mortgage, some utilities, those should all be accounted for in your budget. And then you wouldn't have envelopes for them necessarily. Although I did hear an interesting sidestep here. I did hear a variation on the envelope system. Someone my sister was talking to says that they fill envelopes up with whatever extra cash they make. Like, let's say they sell something on Facebook Marketplace. We've talked about that before. That extra money they would put in an envelope for something that's behind. And once that envelope's filled up, they would send in that payment.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But okay. So back to our topic. As much as possible, you should pay your expenses in person and in cash only. So at the start of the month, you would put cash in your envelopes labeled with your budget line. So you'd have an envelope for groceries, one for entertainment, one for eating out. Those are great examples. What's clothing could be in another envelope. What are some other examples, Craig? Help me out.
Groceries, entertainment.
Gas, like for your car.
Yeah, gasoline's a big one.
So we started on the envelope system back in, let me look at my budget spreadsheet, 2014. That's when we started our budgeting. And initially it was envelopes. I did find that it was really inconvenient to pay for gas in the car using cash. So I got around that by buying prepaid gas cards instead, because, you know, everyone wants to pay at the pump, right? It's so inconvenient to have to walk into a gas station. So you can think of ways like that you can hack that. Okay, it's still just a set amount, a budgeted amount that's allocated, but we use the gas card. So that might be an option for you. All right, so you put everything in the envelope at the start of the month, and you have the amount labeled on your envelope. So you might not have all that money at the start of the month to put in there. You might have to put some of it in there at your second pay period or however often you get paid. But you put all the money in, and when the envelope is empty, your spending stops. So you're essentially tracking itself in the envelope. And yes, sometimes it's a little inconvenient to carry around a whole stack of envelopes, but you can really simplify that by just getting one of those little accordion like coupon holders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I used for the longest time. I just put little device. Actually, I had just a larger wallet that I pulled out those index card dividers and just used those as my dividers in my wallet. And I had each divider labeled instead of envelopes. But
you asked me about categories.
Yeah.
Real quick. I Googled categories for the envelope system. Uh-huh. They came up with 26 categories. They had
vary depending on your budget. Yeah.
But it makes sense once I looked at it, like barber or hair.
Yep.
Clothing, cosmetics, dry cleaning, education, food, furnitures, gasoline, gifts. Gifts is a big one.
Gifts is a big one, because you want to put that money in every single month, keep funding it, so that when these events happen, like what? Think about my sister, who all the birthdays and Christmas are in December. If she's not putting money in that envelope every month of the year, it's going to be a huge burden when that month comes around. Yep. But if you're budgeting all year long, then you're like, oh, here's my money for that.
Health club, hobbies. Mm-hmm. You know, people still do their hobbies. Pets. That's a big one.
That's a big one. We talked about that in a savvy saving segment.
You said vacations, subscriptions, vehicle insurance, vehicle maintenance. You got to change your oil. Yeah. Anyway, I just...
No, that's helpful. That. Yeah. So yes, you absolutely want to be putting money in envelopes that are for things you have to save for less frequent costs. Like you don't pay your license plate renewal every month, but it sure comes up once a year. And if you're budgeting $10 every month into the envelope, then when that year comes around and you have to pay $120, it's already there. Mm-hmm. The big thing here is you want to avoid the temptation to move money between envelopes. So let's say you have an envelope for clothing and one for restaurants, and you want to go to Target and buy a whole bunch of new clothes. You can't just say, oh, well, I'll just sacrifice going to the restaurant and double up my clothing budget. Nope. You're kind of cheating there. So that's not really helping you to become more disciplined in sticking to what you budgeted. Remember, budget is not a bad word. It's just a plan. It's another word for a financial plan. So you got to make a plan and then stick to the plan. But if your plan needs to be adjusted, then adjust the plan next month.
And this whole financial thing, 80% is psychology, and that's part of it, disciplining yourself.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, budgeting is super easy. So is losing weight. I mean, eat better and exercise. Everyone knows.
I don't want to.
Yeah, it's the execution that's hard. Yeah. So, you know, you got to make the plan and stick to the plan. Just like if you want to lose weight, you got to stick past, you know, New Year's week and actually go to the gym and eat better. And it's eat right and exercise. Easy.
I don't think anybody wants to hang out with us.
Spend
Can you
more,
imagine what we're probably out?
Make more, like, spend less.
Like Saturday night. Hey, should we invite Craig and Amanda over to a party? I'm like, no, man, they're boring as crap. They'll pick on us.
1,000% true. I am very boring. I had a friend visit and she asked, well, what do you guys do for fun? And I drew a complete blank and I still have no answer to that.
We work on our spreadsheets. You want to sit in our meeting?
Yeah. Exactly. I don't do anything unless it's advancing my future. So nothing real fun. Maybe I'll get a new pair of rollerblades one of these days.
There you go.
That's it.
All right. And where can we find Amanda on social media?
Oh, you can find me on my riveting Instagram page, Agile Amanda.
Agile Amanda.
Also on Twitter.
She finally made it on there. I want her to have double-digit followers. Right now, it's single. We're going to get that built up. We're going to get that built up.
And my son made fun of me. He's like, do people still use Twitter?
You know what? Like, people are actually stopping using Instagram right now.
Oh, really?
Yep. Apparently, it has peaked. So,
okay.
Because you're now on there. So now it's time. It's all over.
I chased everyone away.
It's all over. Yeah, the kids said it's over. So, okay. All right. Thank you, Amanda. It's all about TikTok, by the way. Now you need to get on TikTok.
I can't. I just can't.
Okay. Thank you. And as always, a quick reminder, check out our website, rockonthemoney.com. We have show notes. All the podcasts are located right there. The website turns into a player. You can play it right on your phone. Plus, there's links there so you can subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn. And if you could leave us a review and some star ratings on those platforms, it really, really helps us out a lot. Check out our Facebook group community with over 3,000 people in there. Facebook.com/groups/your401k. And also check out our Facebook page at Rock on the Money. So long, everybody. We really, really do have a lot of gratitude for you listening, sharing, and spreading the word. You guys are great. Amanda and I cannot emphasize how much we appreciate you guys. So long, and we'll see you again next week. Until next time, America. America's Rockland, USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.